This is Sea Change Radio, covering the shift to sustainability. I'm Alex Wise.
There are lots of people who like this president, who believe what he's saying, but everyone, when they open up their mail and look at their energy bill and see that it's gone way, way up and see that it's hurting them, it damages the president's credibility.
We often hear the expression, we don't negotiate with terrorists. But what happens if the terrorists control all three branches of government? This week on Sea Change Radio, we talked to David Kiva, the president of EDF Action, an offshoot of the Environmental Defense Fund that focuses on public policy and political advocacy. We try to unpack some of the more deleterious policies of the current administration with a focus on rising energy prices and take a brief look at the landscape of big conservation. I'm joined now on Sea Change Radio by David Kiva. He's the president of EDF Action, which is the advocacy partner of the Environmental Defense Fund. David, welcome to Sea Change Radio.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm delighted to be here.
So why don't you first explain what EDF Action's mission is on the whole, and then let's dive into what you and your colleagues have been up to since January 20th, 2025.
Sure. Well, as you mentioned, we are the advocacy partner of the Environmental Defense Fund. So we exist to help EDF get its policy priorities over the finish line. And we do that in state houses. We had a couple of recent big successes in Sacramento and bills that Governor Newsom signed into law that were huge priorities for EDF. We do it in the halls of Congress here in Washington, D.C., and we do it by trying our very best to get out in front of the American people and share with them our expert understanding of what's going on and why the policy shifts that we're seeing are things that people ought to be paying attention to because they have real impacts on their lives.
And how do you impact policy?
Well, EDF, the Environmental Defense Fund, leads the way on some of the policy development, and then we try to help to get them over the finish line, both in state houses by working with lawmakers, finding champions, helping to persuade folks who are a little bit on the fence about it to get on board, and by doing some education to the American people of what the policies that we support will, how they'll positively impact their lives. Like, if you vote for this bill, it'll cause your energy prices to go down, for instance, or cause your constituents' energy prices to go down, for instance. And then it's not the primary purpose of our organization and never will be, but we also spend a significant amount of our time engaging in elections, because if you get somebody elected into office who's already aligned with your worldview and already understands how important it is to make progress on the environment and the transition to clean energy, you start from a place that's a lot further along than having to educate someone who maybe has a different set of priorities.
Well, this administration seems to be opposed to most of the values that EDF espouses, much more so than its first 4 years. And it's been stunning to see the pace with which we've seen environmental protections rolled back and energy prices and threatened. What are some of the top line issues that average citizens can make an impact in changing?
Well, it's a wide menu, unfortunately, Alex, to choose from. There are quite a few actions that this administration have taken that are deeply, deeply alarming. One thing that they did, the president did on his very first day in office, that I actually don't disagree with so much, is he declared an energy emergency. The problem with that is that every action he's taken in the 9+ months since that he's been in office hasn't been geared towards actually getting more energy into the system. It's been geared towards redefining energy so that it's exclusively talking about fossil fuels and trying to stomp out any sort of clean energy generation or to discourage investment in it as best he possibly can, and to encourage the burning of the dirtiest sorts of fossil fuels, especially coal. And that doesn't serve any greater purpose. It doesn't help anybody that I know of, except for perhaps a handful of executives at coal and oil companies. But it's causing bills to go up across the board. This president promised that if he was elected, he'd cut energy prices in half within 12 to 18 months. Instead of doing that, they're up over 10% across the board, and they're going up astronomically. Utilities are going to their regulators and asking them all across the country for approval to raise your energy bills even higher. And that's a kind of a leading indicator. Like you don't see it on your energy bill today, but it's coming when the regulators say yes and approve these rate increases because the costs have increased. The efforts that President Trump has made to punish clean energy are hurting every single American. And I think one of the things that's kind of interesting and also challenging to me, and why I'm here to talk to you and to your audience today, is I think the American people don't understand how much clean energy we currently already have on the system. Our friends at American Clean Power, a trade association, did a look back at 2024. They found that 93% of all newly generated energy that came on the grid in 2024 came from wind, from solar, and from storage. So when the president goes out of his way to squash projects in wind and solar and discourage investment in storage, that leads to your bills and my bills going up.
So states that have made that type of investment, David, into clean energy, the utilities in those states that have solar and wind as a significant portion of their portfolios have been able to keep their energy prices, utility bills, lower than some of these states that haven't, except one that stands out is my state, California, where we keep seeing significant rises. Those are attributed to wildfire costs and the external forces of climate change that have impacted this state. When you say that energy prices are soaring, what are those utilities that are raising their prices pointing towards as the reasons for these energy prices? Like, for example, PG&E in California saying, well, it's the wildfires, but let's say it's, I don't know, Wyoming or Georgia, a utility that may not have a significant clean energy portfolio.
Sure. Well, there are a couple of pieces to that. First of all, you're absolutely right. The states that generate the most energy via renewable sources tend to have the lowest energy costs. And Iowa is a shining example of this. They get over 60% of their overall energy from wind power in that state. They were a really early adapter of wind. They have, on balance, some of the lowest energy costs of any state anywhere in the country. So that's a really, really good example of that. In terms of what's driving prices up, and it's important to note that prices are rising by more than twice the rate of inflation. So everything costs too much right now, but your energy bills are rising faster than just about anything else that's out there. Everyone is pointing to and really worried about a huge spike in energy demand that's being driven largely by the rapid expansion of AI and of data centers that are powering artificial intelligence. There simply is not enough energy being provided for all of the demand. And I'm seeing this translate into political races. I was out in Prince William County a couple of weeks ago knocking doors for Abigail Spanberger, who's on the ballot on Tuesday to be the next governor of the Commonwealth of Virginia, and I sure hope she wins. I love knocking doors in politics. I've been doing it for over 20 years now. I say this a lot, so it sounds rehearsed. It's the only truly tested cure I have for pre-election anxiety. It gets me out there. It's a selfish act. I feel like I'm doing something. I'm stretching my legs a little bit, and I'm talking to people. I love talking about climate and talking about the environment. But historically, I don't usually lead with that because I don't know that somebody I'm talking to cares more about climate and the environment than about any other sort of issues. And your goal in knocking doors and talking to voters is to engage them on the things that they care the most about. That's out the window. People are so worried about energy prices that it's actually an opening to beginning a conversation with them. I was asking people out in Northern Virginia where they've seen huge expansion in data centers. I was like, hey, do you think your energy bills are going in the right direction or the wrong direction? And they just like, oh, man. And, you know, they'd be off to the races on that. So people notice. They're noticing across the board. I think it's incumbent upon us, you and me and groups like EDF Action and others to connect the dots for people that what they're seeing with dismay when they open their bills at home is the direct result of the policies that the Trump administration and President Trump are putting forward. And they're having a real impact and they're hurting you and me and every person in your listening audience.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
Say it's all right.
It's all right.
It's all right. Have a good time, 'cause it's all right. Whoa, it's all right. We're gonna move it slow. When lights are low, when you move it slow, it sounds like a moan, and it's alright. Whoa, it's alright. Now listen to the beat.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to David Kiva from EDF Action. So, David, you mentioned the enormous energy costs of implementing AI and how it's these data centers just are huge sucks on the grid. How can policymakers have a positive effect on trying to curb this energy requirement when AI stocks are such an important part of the investment world and this country is invested in AI, whether we like it or not? So is there a way to stop the bleeding, so to speak?
I think what you're seeing from voters, including voters in Northern Virginia, which is an area that's seen more data center expansion than just about anywhere else in the country, is a desire to see that the companies that are building these facilities, which tend to be some of the wealthiest, best capitalized firms anywhere in the world, ought to pay their fair share for the energy that they are taking. So that's one thing. And that's not an EDF or EDF Action policy prescription per se. That's an observation of what I've heard and seen voters asking for. The second thing is, I think people need to understand that if you wanted to invest in a new natural gas facility, it takes about 7 years to bring that online and have that energy actually hit the grid. Other forms of energy like nuclear, to start a new facility, take even longer than that. The fastest way to scale up energy supply is to lean in on solar and wind, and on solar especially. The steps that President Trump and his administration are taking are aimed at exactly the opposite of that. They're trying to punish renewable energy just because it's green or clean and privilege burning of fossil fuels, including directly subsidizing coal, which is the dirtiest and most expensive form of energy we could possibly burn.
So in terms of nuclear, I saw that Microsoft had bought Three Mile Island, the nuclear facility that was in the news when I was a child because of its meltdown. Or near meltdown. I don't know if this is a cry for help or if it's an encouraging sign that there are companies out there who are trying to do something other than burn coal to fuel their data centers. How did EDF Action and you view that purchase?
It's complicated, and it's an emerging world and an emerging landscape, and we're watching it very, very carefully.
So the Environmental Defense Fund is part of, for lack of a better term, big
environment, big conservation. What are some of the ways that your organization can set itself apart from the Sierra Clubs, the Greenpeaces, without naming names, but why should people give to your organization instead of another environmental organization? It's hard for donors to choose, and make your pitch to listeners. What makes EDF special?
I think what makes EDF special is the experts who are here and the relentless focus on science and economics. That's at the heart of everything that the Environmental Defense Fund does. And it directly informs my work leading EDF action. I think there's this disconnect that's out there that I'm really interested in studying and learning a little bit more about between how accessible and affordable clean energy sources are today and people's perception of how accessible and affordable they are. I'll give you an example of that. One of the things we've done over the past couple of years that I thought was really, really cool was a total cost of ownership report comparing very similar models of cars, trucks, and SUVs in specific states and in specific markets and showing people just how much money you would save if you chose to go with an electric model. You know, there's been a lot of talk after this last round of elections around something that Ruben Gallego, the new senator from Arizona, said. He was asked why he had more luck reaching Latinos than some other candidates who didn't fare so well. And he kind of defined his definition of the American dream, or what he was hearing from his constituents was they want a big old truck in their driveway, and it's not to me to tell them how it's powered. Now, that's fine, but our job is to come along and say, you know, the bigger the truck that you want, the more gas it guzzles, the more money you would save if you chose to go with an electric option. We studied the F-150 versus the F-150 Lightning, and the cost savings over a number of years were as high as $20,000. That's real money to real people. I actually, when we did one of these total cost of ownership fact sheets in Nevada last year, I couldn't believe it. I could drive off a lot with an F-150 Lightning for less than $60,000. So I called the policy experts at EDF who had put this study together. And I said, well, that number seemed low to me too. So I spot checked it by picking up the phone and calling a Ford dealership. And yeah, you could get that F-150 Lightning for exactly that price today. I was blown away. And I work in this space. So the opportunity to connect science and economics with people and their lives is, I think, what makes EDF and EDF Action special and gives us a particular place of relevance within the broader environmental movement. Because you're right, it is a big family.
So, David, if you were the chief of staff for a politician, or if you were an elected official, how would you approach dealing with this brand of arsonist in charge of the fire department? How would you deal with negotiating with people who don't believe in, or either don't believe in it or are proposing policies that are not in line with science? Do you meet them in the middle, or do you just hold your ground and try to push for the policies that you believe in the most?
I think the American people need to understand the impacts that the policy decisions that Donald Trump and his administration are making are having on their real lives. And if you listen to what Donald Trump says, it follows a relatively simple formula. Everything was the worst ever before, and now when he's back, it's going to be the best. Like today, a new poll came out from YouGov and The Economist. It showed his approval rating at 39%. That's not only the lowest of his presidency since he was sworn in again in January of this year. That's lower than it was any time he was president previously. That's a really, really low approval rating. His approval ratings for how he's dealing with inflation, he's 32 points underwater on handling inflation from the American people. And yet, when asked about these polls, he said he's ended 8 wars. I couldn't name what 8 wars he's ended. That doesn't sound like it's based in the reality that I'm experiencing here. And that we have the greatest economy in history and that energy prices are way down. That's really, really helpful because there are lots of people who like this president who believe what he's saying. But everyone, when they open up their mail and look at their energy bill and see that it's gone way, way up and see that it's hurting them, it damages the president's credibility with them and trustworthiness across the board. If they see and feel in their own lives something that is markedly different than what he is out there trying to sell them.
Okay, but let's talk about the entire party. Let's say you were a congressman and you have to deal with another congressman across the aisle. Can you meet that person in the middle in good faith when we have this torrent of bad policies that is damaging both the environment and raising energy bills at the same time? Just sticking to the energy issue. But do you meet that person in the middle, or do you just push harder for green subsidies, let's say?
That is a tough question, and it's something that we're trying to figure out. One of the areas where there does seem to be a lot of consensus and a lot of recognition that things are currently broken is around permitting and transmission, especially. Those are areas where Republicans and Democrats and people in the middle and people who eschew political labels or affiliation with a political party altogether can sit together and realize, you know, we do need a better grid that works better for more people. I think there is a lot of agreement in Congress right now on what some of the common sense solutions are. And I think there is a chance that they might move forward with a bill. I think one of the things that I'm hearing over and over again is poisoning reluctance of Democrats to come to the table and agree to a framework around permitting reform and transmission build out is you see the Trump administration moving to squash nearly completed clean energy projects like Revolution Wind off the coast of Rhode Island.
And that was like 90% completed before they squashed it, right?
Absolutely. And same deal in Nevada with the largest solar project ever constructed. It's actually a sort of a bringing together of 7 different projects into one under one roof. All of it had been permitted and approved and gone through environmental review. And then the Trump administration just recently said, well, actually, we're going to throw that out and we're going to make the individual components reapply. That's not done out of real concern for the environment. It's certainly not done out of concern for bringing down people's energy bills and energy costs. And it's why you've seen Republican governors in Nevada and Utah speak out against it and say, this is bad for our constituents. It's dumb policy, and it certainly doesn't help us address an energy shortage.
This is Alex Wise on Sea Change Radio, and I'm speaking to David Kiva. He's the president of EDF Action. So you had mentioned how knocking on doors is one of the most empowering things that a citizen can do, and it gives you optimism. I've been doing it also for 20, 25 years and found that this cycle in 2024, knocking on doors for Kamala Harris in Nevada, was the most depressing. I was so stunned that people were even considering voting for Trump. And I kept seeing all these Trump signs and seeing the amount of ignorance about issues and the laissez-faire attitude towards what happened on like January 6th, for example, just boggled my mind.
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for being out there and for doing your part to try to make the world and our elected leadership a little bit more like we want it to. I believe that participating in our system is always important, even when we don't like the results that come from it. Secondly, one of the data points, and we spent a lot of time looking at polling, that was most revelatory about the decisions that people were making in the 2024 election was when President Trump was president the first time from 2017 to 2021, he did a lousy job managing our economy. He drove it almost completely into a ditch as a result of mishandling of the COVID pandemic. People forgot that. Their view in retrospect of his handling of the economy when he was president the first time, close to the election in 2024, he got better in the rearview mirror in terms of people's recollection of how he did. I think across all seven battleground states, he was north of 50% in terms of approval for handling of the economy the first time he was president. But those numbers are, you know, they have trended in the right direction as he has gone back and attempted to implement an even more extreme agenda than the first time he was president. And as we have seen him absolutely fail to do the one thing that he actually had a mandate to do, which was to bring down costs for the American people. Inflation was people's number one concern going into the 2024 election. They viewed him as a potential change agent and someone who might shake things up and make their lives a little better. I think if you ask a swing voter in Reno or anywhere else, is your life better or worse than it was 9 months ago when he was sworn back into office, you would hear very quickly about specific cost increases in their lives that have gotten worse, not better. I think the American people are paying really, really close attention. I think we're all feeling really squeezed. And I think that there's some political benefit to speaking up to that because it will hopefully lead to some policy changes or at least generate enough outrage when President Trump tries to squash a new massive solar development or wind facility or do things that are going to cause your day-to-day costs to continue to increase.
He's the president of EDF Action, David Kiva. David, thanks so much for being my guest on Sea Change Radio.
Thank you for having me, Alex. It's been a pleasure.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Samford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by King Sunny Ade, The Impressions, and The Rolling Stones.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben, Van Jones, Paul Hawken, and many others. And tune in to Sea Change Radio next week as we continue making connections for sustainability. For Sea Change Radio, I'm Alex Wise.